Hey, explorers, welcome to episode 287 of the TDR Now podcast. We're the first English-speaking podcast focusing on the Disney parks in Asia and also other theme parks like Universal Studios, Legolands, Ghibli Park, all those wonderful places. And we're coming to you directly from Japan. You can find us up on our website at tdrexplorer.com, all over social media, all under TDR Explore. I'm one of your hosts, Chris, Chief Content Editor for TDR Explore, and I am the one that just does not seem to stay put. And joining, as always, is the wonderful Patricia.
Hey, guys. How are you doing? I'm Trish. I work at the tourism office in the city. So if you're in Urayasu, stop on by and ask some advice. And I'm always happy to answer any questions. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at DreamSweetsLove. And I'm the one enjoying summer, but I'm also very nervous about bugs. So I bought some carnivorous plants.
Cockroaches? To
eat No, thank God. I've never seen a roach. Like, I've seen some outside occasionally, like really tiny ones, but I've never seen one in our apartment building. So knock on wood that we don't have any this year either. No, like mosquitoes. And these mosquitoes are like monstrous. If you go to the park at this time of year, like when my teen was a child, you know, you have to go to the park no matter what the season, no matter what the weather, because like that's the place to be, right? And when they're too little, they can't go by themselves, right? So wearing like jeans, okay, in the summertime, the mosquitoes would bite through the jeans. It was a nightmare. So our balcony is pretty high, but occasionally we get the odd mosquito here and there. So hopefully they'll stay fed. If not, I can catch something in the park or something. Or get the kids to, the local kids. I'll be like, hey, kids, catch me some bugs. And I'm sure they'll be happy to catch some. So it should be fine.
Okay, this is like not related to insects, but I was riding my bike yesterday and I saw something like on the ground. Unfortunately, it was a dead rat.
Oh my God.
It caught me off guard because I've never seen one around this area before.
Like outside of the Disney parks.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, there is a rat. Okay, cool. Sorry, I've just never seen one. Like, yeah, there's insects and stuff, but that's everywhere.
And I guess, but you I guess never rats like, are see everywhere. Them like out and about, right?
Yeah. No,
my husband saw one the other day too. I forgot where it was. I think it was maybe at the station or something.
Yeah. The only time I've ever really seen rats is like in Shibuya. Like, really? I mean, there it's really not surprising, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
But before we talk about Singapore, because we're going to talk about IAPA and Singapore and stuff, what I did there. But what have you been doing lately besides, you know, trying to keep the bugs away?
I don't know if this is like Disney podcast friendly. I guess we've talked about this before. I'm living my best horror life. I went to go see like a bunch of horror movies back to back. I went to go see Terrifier 2. I went to go see Megan, or Megan, as it's called here. I went to go see Kikaijima, or I think the English title is Immersion. And there's a bunch more movies coming out. So I'm just like enjoying all the spooky stuff. And tomorrow I'm actually going to the Mofusan exhibit in Ginza. So I'm really excited about that.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Megan yet. I've been meaning to, like, all these movies just came out all at once. And then
all at once.
I was sitting there thinking, what do I want to see? And I couldn't make a decision. So I just thought, you know what? I'm not going to see anything.
Understandable.
Probably not the best way to go about things, but hey, that's what I do. If I get overwhelmed, I'm like, I'm not doing anything.
This is my season. So I live for the horror movies. I cannot give them up. It's my one chance, because horror movies are kind of rare here.
Yeah, that's true.
Sometimes you'll get like some movies, even domestic movies, that they're only showing like at one cinema in the city. You know, you have to go all the way out to Shinjuku or something. So it's the chance.
Yeah, I haven't seen Little Mermaid yet. I haven't seen Megan. I want to go see the new Sailor Moon film.
The show times are so early for that. I'm going to go see that tomorrow after I go to Ginza. The show times are so tight. The latest one here is at 5 o'clock.
Strange. Which is
like, come on, if you're working, it's like impossible to see. And little kids aren't into that, right? Like, it's mostly older women that are going to see these movies. So it's like, what are you doing? You know, because the little kids are all into Pretty Cure, right? Pre-Cure. I don't know. I don't understand what the plan was.
I don't know how they decide these things.
Let's get into Singapore.
Yeah, talk about Singapore. It was a good time. I enjoyed it. It was very quick. I was there, I guess, technically one full day.
Mm-hmm.
Flew in Tuesday morning. So we landed in Singapore around 1 o'clock, had the rest of the day, and then all of Wednesday, and then most of Thursday, and we flew out at 10 o'clock at night, overnight, back to Japan. There's only a 1 hour difference, so there's really no jet lag, so to speak, to really deal with, so that's not terrible. We flew with Scoot. I've never flown Scoot before. It's like a low-cost airline. It was fine. They charge you for everything. I made the mistake of not filling up my water bottle, so I had to pay, $5 for water.
How long is the flight from Japan to Singapore?
About 6.5 hours.
That's not bad.
It's not as close as you think it would be, I guess.
Yeah, like I imagined it closer.
Yeah, like Hong Kong's closer. Hong Kong's only 4.5 hours. And Shanghai's close, even closer. It's like 2.5 hours. And Korea's even closer.
Oh, yeah. You can go by ferry boat to Korea. Yeah.
So, yeah, some places are pretty close. Some places are not. And Singapore is not super close. Pretty far. We went to IAPA Expo Asia, the first one in 4 years. The last one was in 2019. And then, of course, we went through the pandemic, so nothing was happening. And it's the first time it's back. And this was more of it was for industry. It wasn't consumer focused. It was more industry. So people that basically would sign the checks, for these things to approve theme parks and rides and all this kind of stuff. It was more for that. When we were on the show floor, this woman came up to us and she basically said, "What theme park do you want to build?" And she had this catalog. She said, "Do you want a water park? Do you want a family amusement park?" She had like these blueprints for these parks, which it was just like so fascinating to me.
Yeah.
For the record, I am not in the market for a theme park. I don't have the funds for that. So we went on the show floor and it was quite overwhelming. There was everything you can think of from the really big coaster manufacturers, ride vehicle manufacturers, which I'll talk about in a second, and even like small things down to the company that makes the souvenir plates for a lot of the Disney parks was there. They don't make it for Tokyo Disney. I think Tokyo Disney probably uses a different company, but this company's booth, they had stuff from Disneyland Paris, Walt Disney World, Hong Kong Disneyland, Shanghai Disneyland. It was just really neat to see like the companies that make these things. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really cool. The company's name was Zico, Z-I-C-C-O. We saw some like VR stuff, which VR is pretty big, which is really no surprise. I did this Ghostbusters VR game where you wear the VR mask and or helmet, and you're basically using the proton pack in VR, and it's multiplayer, so you got to play with other people in the same space. It was actually pretty cool. That was my first time doing something like that.
Didn't they have an event like that for Sony at the Sony space? I forgot what they call it now.
They probably did.
It was
like a
Ghostbusters VR. Was it the same thing or?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know about the Sony thing, but could have been the same company.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty fun. Then there was like a VR coaster demonstration thing where like it flips you upside down and everything while you're wearing the VR helmet. I skipped that because I know I will get sick.
Those
make me sick. I've done them before. I get incredibly dizzy. Oh, I guess I forgot to say at the top of the episode, IAPA invited me to go. So like I was making content and stuff. So I was like, I don't really want to be sick the rest of the day when I'm trying to do all the content creation stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't want to ruin the rest of my day. So I just opted not to do that. And there was, things down to the crane game stuff that you see in like, hotels and family amusement centers, everything you can think of that goes into like an amusement park, a theme park, or a theme space. It was all there. It was quite overwhelming.
Anything like caught your eye in particular that you thought was something new and interesting?
What I did like was, I can't remember, what's the company's name? I forgot to write it down. Was it Triotech? Anyway, there's this company that they would build modular attractions that would fit in any, basically whatever space they have to work with. They can make these modular like track attractions. Everything's kind of pre-built and there's heavy reliance on screens and stuff, but they can customize the tracks and stuff. based off of what the client wants, which I thought was pretty neat. So if it would be like, okay, if you need like this track portion of the ride where someone, the guests go in and then they have to get out at this certain, this other point, and then they go into this big room that has like this big dome, we can do that. Or if you don't need the big dome because it doesn't fit, we can do something else. Like, it was just really interesting to see how that worked.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool, you know, because technology's there now with the screens and VR helmets and things like that, which I thought was pretty neat. The Ghostbusters thing was pretty cool, but that's nothing, like that technology is not that new. That's been around for a while, but I've just never really done it before. Oh, yeah. The company name was Triotech. I was right. They came up with the idea, like they pivoted their company during the pandemic because they couldn't go to these places to like put the attractions in. So they developed, you know, this modular based attraction that they can kind of fit into different spaces while they couldn't go anywhere.
Okay.
It basically saved their company, which is pretty smart to do when, you know, we couldn't go anywhere. Probably my favorite though was the sessions.
Okay.
There was educational sessions. So there was a lot to choose from. Some of them were pretty generic, which I had no interest in. It was like how to be a leader, motivational kind of stuff like that. I'm not interested in that kind of stuff. I was more interested on talks from people in the industry. So there was three that I went to over the course of the 2 days. One was about food at the theme parks. One is about merchandising at the theme parks. And one was about entertainment at the theme parks. And I found those super interesting. I really enjoyed those.
What kind of things did you learn?
So for the food one, I'm going to name the people that were in it. There was Christopher Chan from Creative Culture City and Richie Lee from Legoland Shanghai Resort and Alan Kwok, from Shanghai Disney Resort. And they talked about how long they work on the food. Like, I didn't realize that the planning for food can take years. Like, they plan some of the stuff years in advance. I kind of thought in my mind, like, oh, maybe at most a year out is kind of what I was thinking. But no, like, depending on the project, they're planning this food well in advance, like almost as far when a park is being built or something. Like, they're already planning the food, even though it's going to be years out, which I thought was very interesting. And the other thing was how they select what kind of food goes where. I kind of thought this was the case, but it was just nice to hear it from people in the industry directly, that how they decide what food goes in the parks and what parts of the parks, it really all depends on the locale. Where is this park located? Like the locals and who their target audience is, which of course makes sense.
Yeah.
So they're giving examples of mainland China. I don't remember the exact regions they were talking about, but they'll say like in one region of China, like the southeast, just using that as an example, a park that was built there, locals really love dumplings. So there was a lot of emphasis on dumplings for a lot of the restaurants because that's what the locals want. And then in the north, there was more emphasis on noodles. So they would cater to that. So it was very interesting just to hear how they do all this research to make sure they're catering food to the largest amount of people that are going to be visiting the parks, which makes sense. Like, obviously, you have to make food for a lot of people and you want to try and cover as many people as possible with your dishes. And then talking about how to balance between how do we have stuff that's really well themed to things that are just more just to kind of get the job done, like how to kind of figure that out, which I thought was very interesting, which, you know, I guess is always a struggle, right? Like, we do know, like, some places the food looks really cute, but the quality's not really there, right? Like, the taste is kind of like, eh. And then there's some stuff that's like, you know, it's not cute or anything, but it tastes really good. I thought that was just fascinating how they come up with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Merchandising, I thought was pretty fun.
What kinds of things did they talk about?
When I saw this on there, I thought I had to go, right? Because merchandising is a big thing for the parks. And the two that gave the talk were Daniel Kouf, I might be saying that wrong, from Universal Beijing Resort, and then David Koo from Walt Disney Attractions Japan, head of like working on merchandising for Tokyo Disney Resort, which is pretty neat, I think, because, you know, we know Tokyo Disney Resort does a very good job with their merchandising. I haven't been to Beijing, so I don't really know, but I'm guessing it's pretty cute. It kind of went back to the same thing as the food, like really catering to what the market wants, the locals want, what they gravitate towards. It's just very interesting. Like a good example that was given for Beijing was in the US, the big sellers are t-shirts with like logos and stuff on it. Beijing? No, it's not. I think he said it was like plush animals is like the big seller.
Yeah.
So it's just like very, very different markets, which I thought was very interesting. And then for, you know, kind of the same thing for Tokyo Disney. For Tokyo Disney, it's more about making things, I guess, like more trendy, you know, making sure like, you know, the 20 somethings that are going to want to buy the merchandise or wear the merchandise, you know, that doesn't look too childlike.
Yeah.
So like you and I both know the fashion here is pretty good. People will buy a lot of the merchandise and it looks good. It really does look good. Like it's stuff that a lot of it you can just wear like normally and a lot of people won't really bat an eye for some of the stuff. Not like obviously not everything, but like there's some stuff that I, you know, I'll just wear normally because it looks nice.
Sure, sure.
So I thought that was very interesting. And then there was the entertainment. There was Daniel Perez from Universal Studios Japan, Eva O-Yung, I'm probably saying that wrong, from Ocean Park in Hong Kong, and then Melissa Weigel, I'm sorry for butchering everyone's names, from Moment Factory, which I believe is based in Japan. Again, same thing, like how they plan for these things, like how long it takes to plan for these, for entertainment. And probably the biggest takeaway is how they want to design entertainment to get people to come back, which I thought was kind of interesting to hear because, you know, how we've talked about Tokyo Disney and its lack of entertainment lately. So it's just interesting hearing this from other people outside of Disney talking about that, especially Universal Studios, because we know Universal Studios has really been killing it when it comes to entertainment lately.
Yeah.
So yeah, just a lot of kind of the same thing as food and merchandise. Knowing your audience, knowing what the locals want, how to get people to come back, things like that.
Did they say like what kind of things they think are effective for making people want to come back?
A lot of emphasis on taking characters, especially characters from your parks, like not necessarily IP characters, because, you know, like some parks, like Ocean Park, for example, doesn't really have IP characters, like they have their own characters. But it's just how to take these characters and make them do things that are unexpected.
Oh, that's pretty fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Making them do unexpected things that draws people to come back and want to check it out, but also has to resonate with people as well. So a good example is the Sesame Street shows at Universal Studios. I think the current one right now, they keep changing it. It's always different. But I remember at one point, they had a skateboarding Sesame Street show. Like, that's very unexpected. I don't think of Elmo skateboarding. Mm-hmm. But they did it, right?
Yeah.
They really did it. And for things that aren't, like, based on characters, a lot of investing, is how they put it, into your performers. So making sure you pay for the top talent to make these things work. Which I 100% agree with. And an example that was used was the violin show at Universal Studios Japan.
Yeah.
They brought, or still have, the show's still there. I think it's just a little different now. But they have like these violinists that know what they're doing. From a production standpoint, it's a pretty simple show. Like there's no grand stage. There's no lighting and all this fancy stuff. It's just some speakers with performers that play the violin. And that's pretty much the show, but it's very popular because it's good.
Yeah, because it's talent, and talent always shines, right? That's really great.
Yeah. So seeing that and hearing that made me feel really good. We know Universal's been killing it with that stuff. And just like to hear it from the people that do work on that stuff, how they approach it, I really enjoyed that. I really did.
Yeah, that's great.
And yeah, I agree. Invest in your talent. I mean, that's how you get... Without the talent, you don't have a show. So Yeah, so that's kind of what we did during IAAPA. It happened for 3 days, but we were only there for like two of the three, even though we were only in Singapore for one full day, but yeah, very quick whirlwind trip. We were still able to squeeze in a lot of stuff. Like we even got to go to Universal for an evening.
Oh, wow.
They had a special buyout night for attendees to IAAPA. So we got to go to that. And only half the park was open, which fair enough. It's fine. I got to do the two coasters that I missed last time.
Oh, cool. What were the two coasters?
The Battlestar Galactica dueling coasters.
Okay, cool.
So there's the human and the Cylon side.
Uh-huh.
Last time I was in Singapore, I wasn't feeling great that day. Like my stomach was just kind of like, because sure. I think it was like the change in food. You know, Singapore has delicious food. And, you know, when you change your diet rather quickly, sometimes it doesn't agree with you.
Sure, sure.
It's kind of what was happening with me that day. So I didn't want to chance anything on the coasters. I didn't do them. But this time I rectified that. And the human side is just like your regular sit down, standard run of the mill coaster. It was fine. I've been on some pretty intense coasters, and this one was kind of, it's a good introduction coaster, I guess, if you're getting into the bigger coasters, is probably a way I would describe it. Like, it's not super intense, but it's not like a child coaster, one for small children. And then there was the Cylon side, which was a hanging coaster, which was a lot more intense, and I enjoyed that one much more.
Oh, cool.
I was really dizzy, though, because there was so many inversions. It was just inversion after inversion after inversion and twisting. I got off it, and I'm like, oh, I am dizzy. Very dizzy. I did the mummy again, because they have the mummy there in Singapore. Oh, cool. The only thing is, so you know the one in Orlando, it's like a movie set based off of the film. This one is not set as like the film set. It's actually set as like the mummy.
Okay.
If that makes sense. It's on a movie set turned to a coaster. It's like just the mummy is what it is. So with that said, there's no Brendan Fraser or anything like that. Like there's no movie elements.
Oh, okay.
But it's pretty much the same ride. You know, there's obviously like little differences like with the set pieces and things like that. But sure. It's pretty much the exact same coaster, which I'm not mad at. It's a fun little coaster.
Okay.
They have the Transformers ride there, which is carbon copy of the one in Orlando. And I think there's one in Hollywood, too. It's the exact same ride system as Spider-Man that they have at USJ here. Probably my favorite, though, is the Spaghetti Space Chase Sesame Street ride.
What is that? Sounds really charming.
It's a family-friendly dark ride. It's kind of, I guess, kind of like Peter Pan.
Aw. So you're like hanging?
Yeah. Like that kind of ride system where you're kind of hanging. Yeah. You're on a rocket ship and you have to go to space with Super Grover and Elmo to save the spaghetti because Dr. Macaroni and some other punny name stole the spaghetti and you have to get it back. And it's just like, it's super cute. Aww. And it's funny. It's really funny. One of my favorite like puns in it was Dr. Macaroni says at the end, says something along the lines of, "My plans are boiling over." it's just a really charming ride. I did the Jurassic Park water ride. So there is not the same ride system as the other Jurassic Park ones. You know, you go through the water and you go up and then you splash down. It's the same idea, but it's a river raft, kind of like Kelly River Rapids, Grizzly Gulch. Like it's that ride system. It's still Jurassic Park. Like you go through all the dinosaurs, blah, blah, blah. The ending freaked me out, though.
What happens? Is it okay to say what happens at the ending? I guess it's fine, right?
The ride's not new. You know. But if you don't want spoilers, skip the next 30 seconds or whatever. You get to the end and there's a tower. You stop, you go into this tower and you're sitting there in the shaft. You're like, what's going on? And then you look up and there's the Tyrannosaurus is at the top. Looking down at you, but then you realize you're in an elevator, so it lifts you up up towards the Tyrannosaurus.
Oh no!
And then it stops, and then when it stops, the shaft opens up on the one side, and then you drop, and that's where you get soaking wet. It's kind of like a luck of the draw if you're going to be facing backwards or not, because you know it's in the circular motion, so it's like a circular vehicle. It was fun. I just got really wet, but I kind of expected that. And then they had the Canopy Flyers, which is the same, almost the same, I think, as the one in Orlando.
The one in Orlando, I think you have to be a kid to ride. So can you ride these?
Yeah, like this adults? One, you can be anyone. You cool. don't need a child to ride it with you.
Yes. What is it like? Okay, I'm so curious about this.
I think because the seats are different, if I remember correctly, for the one in Orlando, it's kind of like you sit in front of each other or something.
Okay.
Well, like one in front of the other. This one, you kind of sit side by side. And it's actually quite quick. You're really like flown around.
Oh, yeah.
It was fun. It's very short. It's like not even a minute long, I would say.
All right.
There was no wait for it because, you know, again, the park was, it was a buyout that night. So there was no wait for anything. Would I wait very long for it? Probably not. But at least I got to do it. So I'm thankful for that.
Cool.
And then for other things we did in Singapore, for being there for one full day, we did do a lot. We crammed in a lot. We went to the Cloud Forest, you know, the indoor like greenhouse that Singapore's famous for. We went there because I wanted to see the Avatar experience that was happening. Mm-hmm. So they had like Avatar stuff everywhere, which is pretty cool. Went to the Gardens by the Bay because, you know, you don't have to pay to go into the Gardens by the Bay. It's all outdoors. Unless you want to climb it, you have to pay for it. But if you want to just walk around the gardens outside, you can do that. So we did that at night. It's really pretty.
When you say climb it, like, what does that involve?
You can, like, there's an elevator and you can go to the top. And then there's, like, rope, well, not ropeways, but, like, walkways between the towers that you can walk okay. on. But we didn't do
so
that.
So not like time. An athletic course.
No. It's just you kind of get this higher vantage point.
Okay.
And then, of course, we did the airport, the Jewel Airport in Singapore. Gorgeous airport, you know, with the water in the middle. And they had a Marvel exhibit on, which was pretty cool.
Nice.
It was just a lot of photo. It was just photo ops is basically what it was. Then they had a Disney 100 pop-up shop in the airport. So they had some exclusive, like, Singapore Disney t-shirts that said like Disney 100 Singapore, and it had characters on and stuff, which I thought was pretty cute. And yeah, so that was the whirlwind trip to Singapore.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it was a good time. Very quick, but a good time. I do want to go back though. I want to try and go back to Singapore this year to go to Horror Nights.
Oh, that's right. I wonder what it's like there.
Yeah, I'm really, like, I want to do Horror Nights there. I want to do Horror Nights in all the Universal parks.
Sure, yeah.
That's kind of like my bucket list.
Have you started looking into it? Like, what it's like, looking at what it's been like in previous years, or?
I've seen things online, like, years before, so I have an idea of it. We'll have to see. Yeah, so we have stuff up on the blog. I'll put links in the description for everyone here if you want to read more about IAPA. We have a video on YouTube and stuff as well, so you can go and check all that out. Before we go, though, we're going to thank some wonderful explorers who are supporting us over on Patreon. So if you want to do that, you can head on over to patreon.com/TDRnow. And a big thank you to Acro Disney Girl, Adam, Amanda C, Amy B, Amy C, Mama Explorer, Benjamin, Brent M, Carrie, Chris B, Claire, Claudia, Dave, David, Baker, Kevin, Shani B, Harry, Marina, Beth, and Eli.
And thank you to Jamie, Jose, Kathy, Lee, Marie, Michelle, Murray, Sophie, Spoopy, Thomas, Kate, Alexandra, Lizzie, Amy and Andy, Dana, Cassandra, Annie, Sonia, WW, and Paige.
And remember to rate, review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, wherever you're listening to us from. Hit that follow button, that subscribe button, whatever the verbiage is. And you find us on our website, tdrexplorer.com. I'm one of your hosts, Chris, Chief Content Editor for TDR Explorer, and I'm going to take a really long nap because I am tired from all this traveling. It's good, but I am exhausted. And joining as always is the wonderful Patricia.
Guys, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye.